Hi, this is Dr. Barbara Byers, and I'm back on a rainy June afternoon here in Texas. We're always happy to have rain in the summer. And so it seems like a good time to talk about resilience, emotional and spiritual resilience. So resilience just means bouncing back to the original form. And there are, I think, three important components to it. One is that resilience is our main tool to protect the brain against stress. Resilience sets the stage for our overall well-being, and it is a character quality. It's a sturdiness and character that really does indicate our maturity and is a pointer toward our growth. You know, to have resilience, we have to have a certain measure of open-heartedness. And it's not just pushing through, it's not just enduring, clamping down, compartmentalizing and coping. It's so much more than that. It carries the idea of there's a freshness to it, that we feel like this hopeful idea, something's ahead, and I'm just gonna keep adjusting and keep growing even through the difficult times. I was thinking about resilience, and I thought, you know, I think it's a combination of perseverance and joy and flexibility and wonder. You won't find that in a textbook. That's just my idea. Perseverance with joy and flexibility and wonder. And really important, resilience can be learned and it can be increased. So Habakkuk 3:19 says, "The sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He enables me to tread on the height." We can walk on high places. We can walk in steep places and in hard places and keep really steady footed in the journey in unfamiliar paths because he's our strength. And as we access his grace, he keeps giving us this resilience. So I said resilience really points to our well-being. Well, the World Health Organization in 1948 decided that our wellness is not only physical, but it's mental and it's social as well. So what are the, and spiritual, so what are the elements of well-being that we're looking at? Well, well-being should be that we have a sense of aliveness and vitality within, that our relationships and our career is satisfying and in harmony with our personality and our giftings, our aptitudes, that we have a sense of belonging, that we feel connected to others and to something bigger than ourselves, that we have a certain contentment and satisfaction with our life, that we have meaning and purpose in our life, and that we're able to deal with stress, because stress is the exact opposite of well-being. And resilience is such a large part of learning to deal with stress. So what skills do we need for emotional resilience? Well, if it's a psychological toughness, if it's a sturdiness, then we're probably going to have to learn to toughen up in situations. We learn to have good coping skills. And by coping, I don't mean, just kind of cope and get through. I mean, we learn how to adjust and thrive. We're able to recover, adjust and grow, especially if there's been crisis or trauma or some adverse situation. They've done a lot of studies on resilience, and there is a strong correlation, in fact, a 0.8 coefficient, 80% correlation between happiness, well-being, and, you know, being able to be resilient. So I want to look at three ways the brain works related to resilience. One is fear-based habits, second is cravings, third is forming new habits. So fear-based habits, to understand emotions, you know, we have to understand stress. Stress is the brain's reaction to perceived threat. And a lot of times there's not a real external threat, it's what we perceive internally. It's that our own thoughts and beliefs, perceptions, distorted interpretations and expectations around what is happening. That forms the vast majority of stress, and like worry, it's internally generated. So chronic stress actually damages the brain. It damages the parts of the brain, the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex. Prefrontal is here, amygdala is here. And it damages the parts that help to regulate our emotions. So the brain is designed so that the amygdala does a threat appraisal. You know, do I fight? Do I flee? Do I just freeze up? But it's appraising, is it safe? Is it dangerous? Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? And of course that experiences then the emotions that we perceive. And the amygdala has very quick decisions, fight, flight, or freeze, very quick, versus our conscious mind, our prefrontal cortex, that's much slower at decision making. And so that's why we develop sometimes these fear-based habits that come from these quick emotions. All right, the second thing is cravings. In cravings, the desire is not the thing. The thing is the pleasure, the relief impact in our brain when we partake of our craving. 95%, they estimate, of the decisions we make, the things we do, are from habit. The habits must really be important. So people with addictions experience increased activity in their brain when they just encounter the object of their addiction. For me, a brownie's enough to stimulate my brain when I encounter chocolate, and I'm, you know, making fun of that. But it's true, that's enough to stimulate it, and then we respond automatically. We're not doing, you know, this constant, this conscious evaluation. We're reacting out of habit, and, you know, no effort's required for habit. Habit just takes over. That's why habit's hard to change, but it is really worth the effort when we're intentional with it. So bad habits give us immediate relief. You know, relief is the thing we're after, but it gives us long-term harm. A good habit gives us immediate and long-term benefit. More often, it's the very long-term benefit. And from the brain's perspective, there's no such thing as a bad habit. The brain gets rewarded. And so so we have all these compulsive habits, and it contributes to so many disorders like chronic pain, depression, obesity, and so on. So we have compulsive overconsumption, and that's like reward-based drinking, you know, the brownie, eating, risky sex, smoking, gambling, but we also have compulsive over-avoidance. We don't just consume, we also avoid, and these are the threat-based activities, habits like chronic anxiety, depression, chronic pain, PTSD. PTSD is that chronic reaction of avoidance. So we're all going to have pain, and sometimes some of us have more trauma than others. The question is, how are we going to deal with this? How resilient are we going to become? Are we going to develop that resilience muscle and make it part of our character? Are we going to seek pleasure and relief? That's a habit. Or are we going to go for something healthier? So the brain, you know, in our habit system, the brain identifies a reinforcement opportunity. Then it evaluates the options, and then it carries out the habit response. And it happens, like I said, very, very quickly. And then the habit memory stored in the basal ganglia is permanent. It's permanent. That's why somebody can stop smoking and 10 years later, all of a sudden, spontaneously, really want to smoke again. It's why it's hard to change too. But as I said, it's really worth it. And to recognize relapse can happen and to set yourself up for success should something like that come up. It's difficult to change, but it is not impossible, and we're not going to go into all that today. The third thing I wanted to talk about the brain then is forming new habits. The prefrontal cortex, which is, you know, we can think of as the conscious mind, has an amazing ability to control and regulate the rest of our brain. but we have to activate it. We just can't just let the amygdala take over and make us react. And the prefrontal cortex plays a significant role in the regulation of emotions and the behavior, the action we choose by anticipating the consequences of our action. We can actually reason with it. It's involved in when we delay gratification. We can override our unconscious habits if we're intentional. We can change our emotions and we can change our behavior by modifying our thoughts and beliefs. Sounds an awful lot like renewing the mind, doesn't it? This is where we engage the renewed mind in Christ. But we keep in mind that executive system is slow, so we have to keep reinforcing the new habits, making the new habits and reinforcing them, and then learning over time, and that creates new pathways in the brain and develops new habits. And when we renew our mind, there's reward there. The reward is freedom. We're learning to reframe our expectations and beliefs and cultivate the goodness of God. And then we're, as I said, creating new connections. So we need a stress-resistant mindset. It protects against the toxic effects of stress on the heart, on the immune system, and on the brain. And stress-resilient people really look at life as something doable, as something workable. When they encounter problems, they believe they can be solved. I can walk through this. I can do this. With God will make a way. He always has a redemptive strategy. And the brain has a way of turning off those stress systems when we believe that we have some control over a stressful situation. When we believe something I do will affect the outcome and it can be good. People with PTSD don't activate this region of their brain very well because the trauma is just so overwhelming it disrupts everything else and they can't suppress the stress response. But if we feel like we have no control, then we're going to develop fear and avoidance, learned helplessness where we just stop making the effort to solve the problems because we feel so stressed. We're going to overvalue things that provide short-term relief and neglect the responses that really push us toward long-term health and growth. So if we want to protect our bodies, one of the things we really need to look at is increasing our resilience to prevent immune suppression, some of this chronic inflammation. Sorry. Positive emotions are stress resistant. That's one of the best things we can do. There are benefits to being optimistic. There are benefits to being happier. We are more sociable. We're more energetic. We're more productive. Research shows all this. We're more resilient. We're more likely to get married. We're more likely to stay married. And I'm quoting research here. We're more likely to earn more. We'll have stronger immune systems and therefore live longer. I just call this felt well-being. So I'm going to do resilience in two parts because I try to keep it, you know, usually to about 15 minutes. So let me just recap what I've said so far today. Resilience is that ability to bounce back, and we can increase our resilience muscle by working on our habits. It is psychological sturdiness. It is the main tool that protects the brain from stress and therefore protects the body as well. Resilience is our ability to recover, adjust, grow, and mature after adversity. And it is what the Lord wants to help us develop. So please join me for part two of resilience. Thanks for listening.